Week 128 of Bratta's Branded Thoughts. I'm joined by Alex Bratta, as I always am. And Alex, we are 1 week closer to the start of Big Ten football. We had quite a bit of football to watch this past weekend. We are going to talk about the week that was in college football, as well as the NFL, as we record this podcast late on Sunday night. So we'll also recap some of the NFL games over the weekend. But this podcast is going to largely be focused on college basketball. It's not our official preview show, but we got an announcement, 2 weeks ago now, almost 2 weeks ago, that the NCAA would be allowing teams to begin their seasons on November the 25th. And that news kind of came right after the news from the Big Ten that the football season would be resumed in October. So we didn't really talk about it a whole lot. We've got a very special guest from our Iowa basketball great, Matt Gatens, is going to be hopping on here with us in just a few moments. But Alex, obviously a lot of hype around this Iowa basketball team. Matt's going to give us a good insight from kind of a different perspective. He at the University of Drake University, he just got a promotion to an assistant coaching position. So congratulations to him, first of all. But what do you think he's going to be able to give us as far as an insight as to how this season can possibly take place amid this pandemic?
Well, I mean, I think that's kind of new territory for anybody, but I think he'll have a perspective of how this type of thing might work. As far as the locker room, you know, he's been in that situation and knows how the whole schedule is. You know, it's kind of hard to picture how a player's life looks day to day during regular season. So he'll be able to tell us how it looks normally and how that might change.
Fran McCaffrey, of course, was at Notre Dame briefly early on. He was with Digger Phelps at Notre Dame. So he's been at this level of success to a degree. But if they're able to accomplish what a lot of people think they can accomplish, and that is Big Ten title, Final Four, I mean, this is, as far as expectations, the highest he's ever seen as a head coach. And I would venture to say probably the highest Sherman Dillard, Kirk Spiraw, Billy Taylor, the assistants, have ever experienced as well, including when Fran was at Lehigh, Siena, UNC Greensboro. So I think it's going to be interesting just to see how Matt thinks Fran will handle this. And of course, you know, Matt's working with a totally different university right now, trying to bring some success to Drake. Of course, we're going to talk a little bit about the departure of Liam Robbins, their star big man from last year, who's now going to be competing against Iowa at Minnesota. There may be some things Matt's not able to comment on, but we're going to enjoy our conversation with Matt Gatens, one of my favorite basketball players of my generation. And I'm not exaggerating that. I'm not trying to kiss up to him because he's coming on here. But Alex, I think I've probably expressed this to you. Just seemed like always a clean-cut guy, very, very polite, mannerly with the media. Just seemed like a humble guy. And, you know, I will admit this. What was it, a year or two ago when Iowa was looking for an assistant coach following the departure of Andrew Francis, I was lobbying for Matt Gatens. And, of course, he had had some coaching experience down with Bruce Pearl at Auburn. But, of course, Fran ended up going with Billy Taylor, and Billy very, very qualified for the position. But I love Matt Gatens. I think he's going to be a great asset to Drake and his elevated position now. So it's going to be very interesting to get his perspective on college basketball in general, Alex.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you know, he's one of the more legendary players from the time that I've been watching Hawkeye basketball anyway, so I know he was probably your favorite, probably the favorite player of yours. Would I be correct in saying that in the time you've been watching?
Yeah, I think so. I really liked Jared Utoff. I think you know that. I really like Luka Garza. There's no question. But and we'll talk to Matt about that. But Matt came to Iowa during a difficult time. I mean, Alford had departed. I believe Alford had recruited Matt Gatens. We'll talk to him a little bit about that. Of course, his dad, Mike Gatens, is kind of an Iowa City legend over there for his time in Iowa athletics, but it was a difficult time, and he certainly set an example of perseverance going really through three coaches, being recruited by Steve Alford, playing under Licklider, and then finally finishing his career with Fran McCaffrey. And what a wide array of personalities you get with those three guys. So we are going to be able to hear his experience with Coach McCaffrey and company. And you're right. I had an opportunity to meet Matt Gaitans as a young kid. I mean, we're talking, see, he was at Iowa. I'll have to ask him, 2009 to 2011. I didn't look that up before the show. I think that's about right, or somewhere in there, maybe 8 to 11, or maybe even a little bit more recent, maybe 9 to 12. I had an opportunity to meet him as a young kid. I would have been, 2020, if he was there in 2009, I think that was pretty early on. I believe Lukeglider was still the coach. So we're probably talking, I was, 13 years old. And or maybe 12 years old, and that experience, that I'm sure it was small to him, but as a kid, it stuck with me. So we're going to get Matt Gaitans on here. Let's add him into the call and welcome our Hawkeye great to the podcast. Pleased to be joined now by Matt Gaitans, former Iowa basketball player and current coach at Drake University. Matt, we were just talking before you jumped on with us. First of all, congratulations on the promotion at Drake. What's your experience been like at Drake? I mean, I know it's been a journey. You were, of course, at Iowa. You were playing overseas in the G League. You were at Auburn. What's your journey been like to get to Des Moines?
I started, I'm from Iowa City, went to Iowa and played at Iowa, and then graduated in 2012, and then did a summer league stint in the NBA, and then went overseas for 4 years. Played in, started in Spain, then went to Ukraine, Turkey, and France. So got to see the world and play all over. And then after that, we had our son was born in France, and we decided to give the G League thing a try, just to give it a shot, to see what would happen. And so I, that season, I began the season playing for the Iowa Energy here in Des Moines, and Coach Woodley, who I actually worked with here at Drake with, and I played for his brother when I was in high school, so I've been close to them and their family, and he sort of convinced me, hey, come try this G League thing out, and that was called the D League at the time, but now it's G League. And he convinced me I was ready to maybe just give it a shot and be closer to home, with our son being born. So I did it, but second game in, I tore my ACL, so I was short-lived, and and decided to be done from there from playing, and took a little time to decide what I wanted to do, but then, I got the itch to, I always wanted to possibly coach. And at that time I kind of started to think about it and reach out to different people and talk to different people about it. And one of those people was Coach Pearl at Auburn, who coached at Iowa back in the 90s, and, was good friends with my dad back then. And then we'd always stayed in touch, family, friends, and everything. And, so he was one of them, a mentor of mine. So I reached out and he offered me a spot, like a job on the spot. He's like, hey, come work for me. We're looking for a GA. The guy can recruit. So he recruited me. It was a pretty good pitch. And then I was sold right away. So I did it, for a year. And then Coach DeVries down there, while we were out down there, had a great year. We went, won the SEC regular season, title for the first time in about 20 years. And first time in the NCAA tournament, I think like 18 years or something. So it was an incredible season, and made some great connections down there, and really, appreciate the opportunity just to be there and get my start into college basketball and learned a lot. And then Coach DeVries got the position here, and I knew I probably was wanting to get back, but I knew it was a special opportunity with him being here. And I didn't know him a ton at the time, but we had crossed paths, and then one of my best friends had played for him, and things like that. And I knew Coach Woodley hopped on board with him right away, and so I talked to the both of them, and it just felt really, really right. And he offered me the position on staff, and I took it right away, and decided to get back closer to home, and had a great spot like Des Moines and Drake, and it's been a great 2 years, and win the league title in our first year here, first time since 08. And so it was a special season. And just now really thankful to for the opportunity to take the next step and step into an assistant coaching role here. So we're just thankful to Coach DeVries for believing in me and the rest of the staff, and really excited for the opportunity.
Did this promotion catch you at all off guard? Was it a little bit premature in your mind, or did you kind of have an idea that this might be where things were headed?
You always talk, through head coach, No, I looked at other things. You know, I was really hungry to get on the road and get on the court. I mean, like an assistant coaching role. I'd done the ops thing here for 2 years. Really appreciated it and learned a ton and from our staff and you know, Coach DeVries and so I felt like I was just ready. And you know, and I had talked to Coach DeVries about other positions and you know, over the last couple of years, you know, after our first year and then, you know, then after our second year there in the summer, you know, especially during the pandemic, but there just wasn't a ton of movement in this business because of it. But you know, we had conversations about, you know, taking that next step and I knew he believed in me, but just like, you just never know if the timing was going to be right for things to work out. So I wouldn't say I was surprised, but you know, it's just, you know, how things work out and timing. And we had conversations about it, but never like situationally, you just never know what's going to happen.
Right. How is your family doing, Matt, during this pandemic? I mean, we'd be remiss if we didn't bring it up because it is such a pain to society in general, but how are you guys coping through this thing?
We're good. You know, it's been a long process as everybody, you know, but we're just happy everyone's healthy and getting through. You know, I have two young ones, so it's I'm glad they're healthy. And you know, one went back in preschool, you know, trying to get back to some normalcy. And but yeah, we've been lucky quite a lot, you know, people, you know, losing jobs and everything. You know, I'm thankful to actually get a promotion throughout this whole thing. Just right. So weird how things work out, but I know a lot of people have a lot worse off. We're getting through and staying close knit and together and spending a lot more time together for sure this summer and fall. You know, it's amazing how long this thing's been going on.
And what a time to be thrown into the fire as an assistant right now. Of course, Brady Ellingson, former Iowa basketball player and Drake graduate, he also was promoted as a result of your promotion. What's your relationship like with Brady Ellingson?
Oh, that's great. You know, he made the jump here in our first year, and you know, we're, you know, thankful to get a guy like him. Nick Norton and him are the first ones, I think, to kind of jump on board when we got the jobs here, and we knew he was really going to help us. And he had a great year. I was really proud of him. I knew he could do it and had the talent. And so I was just happy to see him, you know, finish out his basketball career on a high note and win a league title and then have such a big role in it. So it's been fun. You know, we've been, you know, gotten close. I knew him since his days at Iowa because I would come back and work out in the summers and, you know, stay in touch with some of those guys. But, you know, it's been fun getting closer to him and now from, you know, going from a player coach role to now a colleague and then, you know, someone else on staff and growing our relationship that way. He's done a great job and he's, you know, deserving of his promotion as well and look forward to him continuing to grow in this business.
Just a week or so ago, I went golfing at Valley down in Des Moines and happened to run into Brady. I didn't say hi to him or anything like that, but he was on the driving range and I noticed he was hitting left-handed with left-handed clubs. And I didn't really think anything of it. And I thought he wasn't left-handed. So can you tell me what's the deal? Is he left-handed? Did he shoot right-handed or was he just messing around?
No, he plays lefty and that might be his problem. Because I don't think I think he needs to maybe try out righty.
So is he naturally left-handed?
I don't know. You know, that's a good question. it's funny. I didn't know. And I was surprised too when I saw it for the first time. And Coach DeVries is lefty, but I think he's like most things lefty. So it's like funny. We got a couple guys swinging the wrong way on the golf course.
My brother and I were talking just last week. You know, there are guys in tennis and different sports that do. Rafael Nadal is the first guy that comes to mind that is naturally right-handed and plays left-handed. So I was curious about that, but no. So your time at Iowa, let's kind of talk a little bit about the past. You came to Iowa at a very kind of an odd time, I guess, in the history of Iowa basketball. First of all, did you ever consider going anywhere else? I mean, you were a hometown kid. Was it ever a question that you were going to be a Hawk?
I don't think so. You know, I committed when I was a freshman, so I knew kind of what I wanted to do. You know, I grew up, you know, being a big Hawk fan and, my dad had played there. My mom was a cheerleader. My sisters played sports there. Like it was just, kind of in me, and, you know, and growing up right there, going to practices, watching, you know, Tom Davis's practices and then Coach Alford's, and then being close to all of them. This is what I always wanted. I knew when I was given an opportunity by Coach Alford, I wanted to be a part of it and be a part of the family. Obviously, you know, I never got the chance to play for him, and things didn't shake out that way. And then, spent, you know, played 2 years for Coach Licklider, then 2 years with, Coach McCaffrey. So it's been interesting. You know, you got to, you know, got to see a lot of, you know, kind of three different styles. And, you know, even I didn't play for Coach Alford, but, you know, I was recruited and went to a lot of practices, three different styles and, you know, personalities and everything. So it was interesting. You know, it's not how, when I was a freshman, when I was committing, how I would ever thought it would have played out. But I was, you know, in the end, you know, I was, you know, thankful to, you know, be able to experience the adversity and go through it and stick with it, and, you know, build some great bonds and relationships and had some great memories. You know, we, you know, obviously would have loved to have played, you know, when we were more at the top, but, you know, to be kind of a part of the, you know, I don't know, maybe say rebuild, but, you know, the going through and bringing it back. And, you know, in our last year, making it to our senior year, making it to the NIT and, you know, winning the game at home, getting to the second round, and, you know, was a big deal for us. And, you know, now it probably wouldn't be considered it, but that's, you know, those are expectations and how things change. And then it's nice to have felt a piece of that and help and, you know, have a feeling of helping build that. And then after that, you know, it's fun to watch. While I was overseas, you know, being able to still watch those guys experience success after that. So they've done a great job, and it's a great staff. And so, you know, I was thankful to play for them. And I still consider, you know, Coach Fran a friend and a mentor now to this day.
That's kind of my next question, Matt. I mean, with your journey through basically three different coaches, you talked about Alford and his recruitment, and then Todd Licklider, and then, of course, Fran McCaffrey. You kind of inherited Fran. What does Coach McCaffrey mean to you?
Oh, man. A lot, you know, because we're at a low point. You know, I was close with Coach Lick, too, and their staff. And, you know, I played with his son, John, in high school. So, you know, we were close. And so it just didn't fit. It didn't work out. And, you know, things happened, but, you know, we were at a low point. And, you know, Coach Fran coming in, you know, I didn't, you know much about him coming in. And from day one, you just, you know, felt like, you know, this guy is someone, you know, you want to fight for and go to war with. And, you know, we've had some good experiences, and he was great for me. You know, it didn't start off my first year. I had a thumb injury and missed the first game or two. You know, we lose the game at home to South Dakota State. I didn't play. I had a thumb surgery, so I didn't get off to a great start. And then I was kind of the battle back. And I remember Fran really pushing me when I was on my way back. You know, just you know, not just giving me my position right back. You know, I had to earn it. In those first few games, and kind of had to play out of a few things, you know, for some rust and everything, and really pushed me. And but from there on, you know, it was great, and that was great for me. And he's been huge for me. Good dude, man. He's means a lot, and still stay in touch. You know, see him. You know, if I go back and watch a practice, or you know, see him quite a bit. You know, him and my dad are good buddies now too. You know, post me playing, they've gotten a lot closer, and so it's been fun to see that and see him and my dad kind of develop a great bond too.
One of my most memorable games as a Hawkeye fan, well, actually a pair of games, your performance against Indiana and Wisconsin back to back your senior year. And I think most Iowa fans would agree, over the last 20 years, this century, probably the most dominant performances from one player. Now Luca Garza has obviously tried to steal that from you this past year, but what's it like to get hot like that? I mean, you just couldn't miss, you know, those two games.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm on Luca's level when it comes to dominance, but dude's a beast. It was fun, man. Like, those were a couple, you know, some fun memories down the stretch that year. And I, you know, I said it back then, you know, I still say it now, like, my teammates were just incredible. supporting through that, like, you know, whether it's finding me, you know, Bryce Carter, right, finding me with the ball, or Aaron White, you know, setting screens, you know, just, you know, Melson, Gabe, like, just those dudes were setting me up. I was just, you know, kind of running off of them, catching them and shooting them, or, you know, just finishing them off. But those guys were setting it up, and it was fun. Like, those are memories you'll never forget, you know, those fans coming on the court and knocking off two really good teams, you know, just really well coached. You know, Coach Crean had that team rolling, and then Coach Ryan with Wisconsin, you know, they always have it going up there, but they had a really good team that year as well. So that was, Victor Oladipo was in Indiana, and I'm trying to think, Wisconsin, it was like Jordan Taylor, who, you know, I still stay in touch to this day, and, you know, we always give each other crap about those days, so it's fun.
Was it 12 straight threes?
Yeah, it was six. It was six in the second half of the which game was for? I think Indiana game.
Might have been Indiana, first. Yeah, I believe
and
Indiana. Was
like
first,
six
yeah.
in the first half of the Wisconsin game, and then it's funny. I always tell people that it's weird. You kind of knew. I didn't know what number it was I was on, but I knew I hadn't missed in a while. And then the first one I missed, like number which might have been 13, like felt better than all of them. Like I was shocked I missed it. It was really weird. Like I was like wide open and just like I let it go and I'm like, oh, that's for sure. And that's the one that missed.
Those two performances. And then of course we talked about Luka this year, Jared Utoff versus Iowa State. I believe it was 20.
Yeah.
I want to say 15. You remember that game?
Yeah. I was in,
I was in Hilton for that game. Okay. You were in France.
Didn't he, was it the first or second half? And then one of the halves,
the first half. He just disappeared in the second half, and I have no idea. But that performance in the first half, 30 points, I think probably was right there with what you had going on. Senior, was it 2011? Were you here from 2008 to 2011?
That would have been spring of 2012, so 8 to 12.
Okay, 8 to 12.
Yeah.
But yeah, some of the most memorable Iowa performances of all time. You talked about Matt. You guys had a pretty impressive big man of your own at Drake last. What's it going to take to replace a guy like Liam Robbins?
We brought in a transfer from Seton Hall, Darnell Brody, who will help fill that void. Then we had two young guys who redshirted last year, Anissa Samaka and Nate Ferguson. I think the three of them will kind of help fill that void in a different way. They're different players than him. And will give us a different dynamic on the offensive end. Liam obviously had a great year in this league. They led the league in block shots, and then had a solid productive year on the other end. And we wish him all the luck, and it'll be fun to watch him this year in the Big Ten.
Absolutely, I was hoping Iowa would get him and provide some depth for the Hawks, but he's going to be the replacement for Daniel Latour, so I'm sure he'll thrive up there. And he's got family in Minnesota, am I right? He's got an uncle up there on staff?
Yep, his uncle's on staff there, and his other one is at Louisiana Tech now.
Okay.
So, yeah, he's got a couple uncles in the business, and they're friends of ours, and good family.
So November 25th is kind of the date the NCAA has given as far as the official start to college basketball this year. I know it's an exciting time for staff and players alike, whether it's Drake or Iowa or anywhere else. What's prep like right now for you guys, Matt? I mean, what are you allowed to do? What are you allowed not to do? And when does full go start?
Yeah. It just switched last week. We're now allowed 8 hours on the court. Where before it was four, like four on the court, four in the weight room, but now it's eight on the court. I feel like we're one of the lucky ones. You know, we've been pretty clean, no pun instead, but pretty clean through the COVID situation. And we've been, practicing pretty much, 5-on-5 for the last few weeks. It's felt pretty normal. Besides the coaches, we coach in a face mask and a shield. So that's a little, tough working through, and, the guys can't really see your expressions, and sometimes they can't hear you, even like in a huddle, you feel like you're yelling, and they can't read your mouth, so it's a little difficult in that way. But I'm just glad we're able to be on the court, because I know some teams like aren't even practicing, or some teams are in small groups or only shooting or doing things like that. So we're pretty lucky in that regard. And But yeah, it's interesting. You know, we missed a lot of the summer. You know, everyone did. So you feel like you're trying to put in a lot of things and getting the team caught up to speed. And at the same time, we feel like we've talked about putting things in. You know, in case something were to happen. You know, you want to feel. You know, you have to sit out for 2 weeks. You want to at least get it in and then have something they can fall back on in case something like that does happen. So it's we're throwing a lot at the guys, but they've been really receptive and locked in, and they, you know, it's a fun group, just high character dudes that like play hard and like to work. You know, it's really a joy going to work every day with them, and it's a team I'm really looking forward to coaching this year and watching them play.
Mark Emmert, in his statement announcing the 25th as the starting date to 2020 Hoops, did talk a little bit about testing. Of course, that's been a major issue. Of course, the Big Ten football has set to resume next month because of antigen testing that's now available. We've seen in college football, it seems like some of these smaller programs, mid-major programs, are the ones that are dealing with more of these outbreaks, and maybe not so much outbreaks, but a lot of that contact tracing. And the questions kind of come up, how available will they have this daily testing that, say, mm-hmm. the Big Ten, the Big 12, the Pac-12 has been able to take hold of? What about Drake? I mean, are you concerned with the Missouri Valley and some of the mid-major conferences for basketball having access to that much testing?
Yeah, you know, I think some could struggle through it. I don't know everyone's case, but, you know, I hate to say you assume, but, like, you just don't know if everyone's able to get their hands on, you know, that many tests, or, and also the cost that comes with it.
Right.
From everything I hear, like, Drake will be fine. I'm not really involved in those conversations, but I haven't heard any concerns with that. And we're planning to play a full schedule as of today. I could see some smaller, I think, because the NCAA said, you know, you got to play at least 13 to qualify. For the tournament, I could maybe see some of these, you know, smaller leagues saying, "Hey, we won't play non-conference and just play league play, and maybe save some money on testing." You know, I don't know. I'm just guessing. So we'll see. I think it's going to be a kind of a mismatch of games this year for teams, and it's interesting right now. You know, trying to deal with the schedule and finish out the schedule. You know, there's talks of these bubbles and different things for non-league play, so it's going to be definitely an interesting, you know, end of November, December, and then as we head into league play.
Some of these conferences have opted to start, maybe you alluded to it, start conference season a little bit earlier. Is that something Missouri Valley has looked at? Maybe I missed that announcement. Has there been anything concrete?
No, they came out with our schedules last week, and it's basically pretty normal to what it would have been starting in, December 3rd, 30th, I think is what the start date is, which is pretty normal.
Okay. And does Drake, are you guys involved in an early season tournament?
Yeah. Plan on going down to Florida for a tournament. So we'll still see, you know, how that turns out. You know, we're still getting all the details sorted out through all that stuff. But yeah, that's the plan, and that's been the plan. Even pre-COVID.
Well, we've been so consumed with this pandemic, it's been hard to even, I'm sure it's not hard for you in your position, but it's hard for us as people who try to be fans and cover the sport to even really talk about the sport itself. We're just talking about if we're going to be able to enjoy the sport. And I think now, especially with football, we're pretty confident it's going to happen. I think for basically every major and non-Power 5 conference, I think we're pretty confident about that with basketball too. So what are the goals for Drake basketball this year? I know that each season is a little bit different. What's your outlook?
Yeah, you know, I think our goals are to compete for a league title. You know, those are the expectations we've put on ourselves here in our first 2 years with win and one. And then, you know, last year, so many teams were involved that we were pretty close again. And we made it to the semifinals of the conference tournament down in St. Louis. So that's, those are our expectations to get there. You know, we've done 2 years in a row, we've made it to the weekend in the conference tournament, which, you know, hasn't been done here. And I think maybe ever 50 years. So that's what we're shooting for. We feel like we have a team to do that. You know, I'm not going to say it's a championship or bust season, but I think, you know, we expect to compete, in that top tier. And if you're up there in that top tier, you know, the chips will fall and you never know. get a good seed going into the tournament down in St. Louis. So that those are our expectations, and those are our, you know, the way we prepare with those things in mind.
Do you foresee a scenario where the Missouri Valley or some of these other smaller conferences end up taking, you know, their regular season title winner as opposed to a postseason winner this year, kind of as an exception?
You know, I don't know. I think it would be interesting since, you know, these our mid to lower leagues won't have the opportunities maybe for as many quality wins, you know, for the strength of schedule, right, and the NCAA net. You know, I think it'd be cool maybe if they gave a bid to both, you know, the regular season champ and the tournament champ, just to kind of get a few more quality mid-major teams in there. You know, if it's the same one, maybe that league gets one bid, or if it's, you know, it goes the second place one. I don't know, but there's so many things that would probably come along with that when expand the field or whatnot, but could maybe help. But, you know, who knows? You know, I don't know what they'll do. I know they're going to get determined, and I do know that at least they, you know, they're planning to do it.
The ACC wants everybody in, so
I don't
think that's going to happen. Doesn't sound like is that even feasible? I mean, is that possible? I don't know when you'd have to start and how that would work.
Yeah, we saw that. We're in our offices. We're like, I guess we're in. I guess we're getting in the tournament. Choking around. But
why play the regular season if everybody's in?
So it'd be cool. Like, it'd be, you know, great TV spectacle. But man, it'd be a lot of logistics and planning. You know, I don't know. That was an interesting idea. You know, but I don't think that's what is going to happen.
Kind of wrapping things up here, Matt, what are your personal goals? I mean, obviously you're entering a whole new stratosphere here with your promotion and on the coaching staff at Drake. I know personally, I was kind of lobbying for you as the next assistant to replace Andrew Francis at Iowa. Of course, Billy Taylor is extremely qualified as well. Again, I know you don't want to detract from your focus on Drake, but what is your outlook 5-10 years down the road?
You know, I don't know. You know, this business is so unpredictable. You just don't know. It's all about timing and who you know and the connections at the right time. It's really incredible how it works. But I think if you just continue to put in the work and network and develop your guys and take care of your guys and recruit good high quality guys, and you know, good things will happen. You continue to win and compete. So I don't know. I have aspirations of, you know, hopefully someday, you know, being a head coach somewhere, but like, I'm going into like my second week of being an assistant. So I'm just trying to make the most of that and continue to learn and grow, you know, whether it's with our guys, staff here, learning to learn from them and, other guys I know around the country, just, you know, continue to grow and develop in this role. And it's been fun. It's been a fun couple of weeks here doing it, and I'm enjoying it and then look forward to keep doing it, and we'll see what happens. But I know Taylor, I've known him since Fran brought him in previously, and he left and went and took a head job. He's you know, obviously qualified, been a head coach, Ball State, so he's integrated and an awesome guy. So I was happy to see him come back and get the opportunity there.
As far as your outlook on this pandemic, you know, we've got obviously it's going to be a different season this year. We don't know about fans. I mean, do you care to make any predictions? I know this thing is so unpredictable. Do you foresee a scenario where maybe we get February or March and maybe we get some fans in the stands?
Yeah, I think so. I know there's teams planning for it right now. But I just think, you know, so many things. If things stay as they are now, I think we will. If it gets worse, probably not. I just think it depends what the winter brings, and, you know, if, I don't know too what, you know, the experts say about, you know, an enclosed area compared to open air like a football stadium. Right. But yeah, I just think it just depends what the winter brings. But I think as of now, there's definitely people that are planning on fans, as, you know, you've seen some in college and NFL and whatnot.
Well, again, Matt, we really appreciate you coming on here. I can tell you from my personal experience, you've always been a favorite of mine. I know when I was See, I'm 24 years old when you were at Iowa, and you said 8 to 12, is that right, when your time at Iowa?
Yep.
I think so, probably 2008 or 2009. That would put me at about, probably 12 years old. I have a memory of coming down on the court. You were, I think, warming up, and one of my first Iowa games in my life, and you came over and talked to us, and of course, my brother, he lives in Marshalltown now. I grew up in Marshalltown. I remember you telling us telling me a story about the scar you had on your head. Am I correct in saying you got that scar on a bleacher at Marshalltown playing baseball?
I sure did. We were up there watching City High playing the state tournament when it used to be up there. Gosh, I think I was like, it had to be like 94, 5, 6, somewhere in there. I was probably 6, 7, 8 years old. I was under the bleachers playing, just messing around with my buddies. We were like running from one end to the other and just banged my head on one of the like overhangs, and it was nasty. There was a lot of blood, and you know, got staples over there at some hospital in Marshalltown, and so that's my Marshalltown story. I'll never forget that.
Well, if you're from Marshalltown, just consider yourself lucky that you got out of the hospital, okay? Because a lot of people don't like what goes on at the Marshalltown Hospital. So, but no, Matt, we really appreciate it. I know we appreciate you being a Hawk, and I can say that from personal experience. You've always been a class act, and we're proud to call you a Hawkeye great. So, thanks for coming on here, Matt. Down the road, at some point after this whole thing this pandemic is done, we'll be able to have you back on the show.
Yeah, man, I appreciate you guys having me. I'm glad we were able to make it work, and thanks for the time. Appreciate it.
All right, you have a good night. Keep safe and stay healthy.
Yep, same to you guys. Take care.
Matt Gatens, former Iowa basketball player. Alex, your thoughts? A lot to unravel there. Of course, we wanted to talk to him more about Iowa basketball, but the thing about it is he's so focused. You know, he's 2 weeks into this tenure as an assistant coach at Drake now. Of course, he was director of operations. Now Brady Ellingson is director of operations. I just didn't think, we asked him about Liam Robbins and he mentioned Luca Garza. I just felt uncomfortable asking him specifically about the Hawkeyes when he's just down the road at a Division I college basketball program as a coach.
Yeah, I mean, he said a little bit about Garza, and I think everyone in the country is aware of who he is. Anybody who watches college basketball, but especially him, who I'm sure still follows the Iowa program pretty closely, knows that, Garza is something special, and he's been probably the most dominant player. I mean, he's a different kind of player than, we've had, like you're talking about, Jared Uthoff is a very different kind of player. When he had that incredible game at ISU, a lot of it was, just pulling up at insane distances and missing and making threes and stuff. And, Garza is a totally different kind of player. So, he's definitely special. I'm not sure if Matt would have been comfortable talking about it. I'm sure he would. I mean, just as a fan, he's got to be able to have an opinion.
He would have done it. But like you said, I think we're all in the same boat right now. We're just happy to see basketball. We know what Iowa has coming back. And he mentioned connections. We talked a little bit about his outlook. And I didn't want to bring up, I was going to ask him, did Fran McCaffrey or Gary Barta or the university contact you about the vacancy a couple of years back? I just didn't want to go there. But I do think that this team, I would assume, he's a guy, I have to think about how old Matt Gatens is. He's in his 30s now. He's a guy that I would have to think this is probably the most exciting, again, he's a coach, he's got a different perspective on this now, but this has got to be the most exciting year that he can remember as a Hawkeye. I'm sure he'd admit he's a Hawkeye fan. Wouldn't you say? I mean, when is the last time Iowa's had this kind of hype? I think it'd probably be back Lute Olson days.
Yeah, I don't think in my lifetime I've seen it. I mean, it's kind of, everything's kind of fallen into place, and we don't even know how good some of these guys coming in are. And just from what we saw from last year, I think we all know that this team has got real potential. And they've actually been recognized on a national level during the offseason, which is something we're not used to as Iowa fans, really, in any sport, except wrestling, maybe. So, it's definitely a special year.
So, November 25th, that's the day for Drake. That's the day for Iowa, for Minnesota. All the major programs in mid-major programs, Division I level. Matt was talking about the fan perspective. You know, are we going to be able to see fans at games this coming year? What are your thoughts on that, Alex? I know it's early. We don't know where things are heading. The numbers have gone down nationally. Can we both agree on that? They've gone down. They're not down enough, but they are down. Can we both agree on that?
Honestly, I haven't been watching them, so I'll take your word for it.
Well, I don't pay too much. I mean, I'm talking nationally. I know Iowa and Iowa State, Ames and Iowa City have both struggled, but the numbers have sort of leveled. Of course, you're not going to hear that because nobody wants to focus on that. Everybody wants to talk about how bad everything is. I just think that, you know, I don't know if we'll get a vaccine in December. I don't know. Even if we do, I don't know how much it can be distributed by February. I just think there's a – I have a feeling, and I could be totally wrong on this. I have a feeling that in late March, Alex, when the NCAA tournament rolls around, there's going to be fans at this tournament. I could be wrong on this, and I'm not saying it's going to be a packed house. But look, there's fans at some of these NFL games and college games right now, Alex. And are you hearing about any massive outbreaks right now? Have you heard any? Have you heard about any community spread or massive outbreaks with teams in college or NFL? There have been teams that have shut down because of contact tracing and because of a few cases, and a lot of them are these smaller conference schools. But have you heard of anything major as a result of playing football or fans coming to watch football?
I have not. You know, that's one thing. Like, I was watching NFL today, and I'm just kind of curious to see, because I haven't heard much, but I'm not really, you know, I don't really follow the NFL that closely, but I'm interested to see what happens with them. You know, I think college is, it's going to be interesting also, but for some reason, I'm especially interested in the NFL and just seeing how that plays out, because, you know, obviously we had a pro sport this summer, the NBA that played in a bubble, and that was totally successful, but they went to as extreme lengths as you possibly can, pretty much. And the NFL, you know, it hasn't done that. So it'll be interesting kind of as an experiment, just to see how they fare.
Well, hold on a second though. We're week three. Okay. We've got one player on the COVID-19 reserve in the NFL.
Yeah. I mean, so far,
I mean, that's what I mean. Like, what, again, everybody keeps telling me, it's obvious that it's going to spread with football. Football's not a good idea. How can you put where's the spread?
Well, I think the testing they're going through.
One player put a list a couple days ago.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the testing they're going through is so far so much more advanced than the general population. I mean, just from that, I just don't see how they're going to be able to get players on the field that are infected and just, you know, just by way of that, you're just not going to have as much.
Well, that's what I'm saying. That's what the Big Ten is doing, though. I mean, what the Big Ten has coming in next month with this antigen testing is basically equivalent to what the NFL has been doing. Nobody's going to be. They're going to get test results within 15 minutes. They're going to test them every day before practice, every time before a game. Nobody's going to be allowed in the complex except those who are tested negative. All right, and the tests, from everything we know, are a lot more accurate. Look at the NFL. Look at MLB, Alex. We had some problems. I love how everybody panicked when the Cardinals got shut down. Everybody panicked. And what do you know? The postseason is going to be starting. I'm just tired of hearing about how sports can't be played. I'm not saying that you put yourself at risk. I'm not going to go into this rant again. Listen, the NFL's been, this is week three. We've heard it. There've been no outbreaks, none. Okay. I was told before all this thing broke out, or I shouldn't say broke out, before the NFL season started, Alex, I was told, and you know who I'm talking about, I was told that the reason this person wasn't going to run their fantasy football league this year was because it would not be fun because there'd be too many players out due to COVID. Too many players out due to COVID. Alex, how many fantasy players have been out due to COVID? You want to know the answer? Zero. Because there's one player on COVID. There's been one player on the COVID reserve all regular season. This is week three. All regular season, there was like two players in training camp, and what, you had like double the number of guys because you had guys that hadn't made the official 53-man roster yet. And we've not had any star. Not one offensive player. We've had one defensive player that just went on the COVID list, I believe 2 days ago, and he was the first COVID reserve player of this entire season so far. I just thought it was almost laughable. yeah, we're not going to be able to play. There's no reason to play fantasy football because nobody's going to play. It's going to be too many players out, Alex.
He also said the season would get shut down, which to me is like. Here's the thing: is like money talks, no blocks. And these guys
again
shut down the season. Let's just be honest.
But there's no reason to shut down the season.
Well, even
that's
if it was, I don't think they would. It's like,
but there's not.
You know, these guys are not high risk, you know, and the money. So huge.
Listen, and everybody has a right to their own opinion, and I'm going to give my opinion about this opinion right now. The problem is
about
this person
your own.
Also, yeah. The problem is this person also made the claim that the non-Big Ten Pac-12 conferences, that is the SEC, the ACC, and the Big 12, the reason they were still playing, you know what he said? One word, money. One word, money. That's why they're playing. So, again, if you want to make that claim, then make the claim every year. Because every year it's about money. Is it not, Alex? Don't make the claim that, well, they're playing this year because of money. No, actually, they play every year because of money.
I mean, as far as, you know, fantasy and as a fan, I don't see how that changes anything. But how that would change your opinion on what to do as far as watching and being involved in. Season as a fan, I don't see how that changes anything. You know what I'm saying?
Like I said, I do, but like I said, every year they play for money, it's because of money that they're playing. So to say, well, that's why they're playing this year, okay, and what's your point? Can they do it safely? Well, Alex, they're doing it safely. Let me just read through. I'm going to tell me what you think about this. All right. By the way, you saw the Pac-12 announce that they're going to be playing a really abbreviated season, but they're going to be theoretically done with their season before the selection committee makes their playoff picks. The MAC doesn't have any agenda for the playoff. The MAC isn't going to make the playoff. Okay? The MAC could play in the spring and make the same amount of money that they'd make this fall. Okay? They decided to play this year. The Mountain West announced a couple days ago they're playing this year. You really think the Mountain West has a dog in the playoffs? You think they have a motive to get more money? Why would Mountain West make any more money right now than they would in the spring? Now, yeah. And you could say, well, logistically, you don't want to put players in the field, you know, two seasons in 1 year. Okay, well, then it's not about money; it's about safety. I hate that argument. And let me read through. I want to read a couple weeks of these postponements, and again. See if you notice a common theme with this. All right. Let's start with college football week one. And you tell me if you notice a common theme here. Jacksonville State, Florida International. Rice and Houston. Let's go to week two. Florida International, UCF. Marshall, East Carolina. Louisiana Tech, Baylor. SMU, TCU. Let's go to week three. Charlotte, North Carolina. Army, BYU. FAU, Georgia Southern. Central Arkansas, Arkansas State. Houston, Baylor. Games that have been postponed week four. Notre Dame, Wake Forest. Georgia State, Charlotte. Tulsa, Arkansas State. USF, FAU. North Texas, Houston. Week five, games that have already been postponed. Rice and Marshall. It's the only game that's been postponed officially for week five. What's the common theme you notice with all those games, Alex?
No, I didn't.
About 90% of those teams that were involved are non-Power 5 conference teams.
Mm-hmm.
There have been a few of major conference, and I'd have to look back as to if it was the actual Power 5 team or if it was the non-Power 5 team. But games that have involved Power 5 teams where they've had to suspend play, where they've had to postpone play. Baylor, Louisiana Tech was postponed. Don't have a report on that one as to why. Same with SMU, TCU. I think that one was contact tracing with TCU, although I could be wrong on that. But the point here is, Alex, we've already had several weeks of Big 12 play. Well, a couple weeks of Big 12 play. We've had several weeks of ACC play. We saw the SEC play this past weekend. The Pac-12 is going to start in about a month. The Big 10 is going to start in less than a month. I'm just saying those mid-major programs, I don't think you'd be going out on a limb to say that those mid-major programs are programs and schools that simply don't have access to the quality or number of tests that the Power Five conferences do. Is that far-fetched to say?
I mean, I don't know as far as how what their access is, but that would certainly be if it does differ, which, you know, I bet it does. But if it does, yeah, that would be a huge factor. I mean, the antigen testing isn't as accurate as the PCR, the nasal swab testing, but, you know, it's accurate enough, and it's more of a numbers game, I think, with that. So if they're just not able to get access to as many tests, I could see that definitely changing things.
We're going to see the Big Ten play, okay? I've had people say, well, they've announced, but I'll believe it when I see it. Okay, the Big Ten is playing. Do you have any doubt that we're going to get a season in? Any doubt at all right now?
No, I mean, like I said, I think we could see, you know, maybe at worst the team have to not play a week. We'll probably see a couple players. I don't know how many I would guess if I had to bet, but I think we'll probably see players have to miss a game or two. But no, I don't. I think the season will probably go through. I mean, they've already they've kind of been mentally, you know, these people that are setting this up, they've already explored all these scenarios. So I think so far things have been going better for these other conferences than a lot of them probably expected. So I think they're mentally prepared to finish the season. I think they've set up the logistics that way.
There is not going to be an argument, I don't believe, for football spreading this virus, Alex. If this virus is going to spread in Iowa or Maryland or Purdue or whoever is going to get shut down at some point, which I think very well could happen. I think we both agree there may be a postponement or two. And if it's a postponement, I mean, if the college football playoff stays the date it does, a postponement equals a cancellation, okay? Because there's no wiggle room in the schedule. I also think there's a possibility certain players may just miss games, like you said. But I think it's very clear at this point that the problems that are going to come up with college football are not football related. They are student related. And I'll pick on Ivory Kelly Martin because I know he's a guy who's very, very mature and responsible. He's a responsible young guy from everything that Kirk Ferentz has said. And of course, he's been a guy that's been in front of the microphone talking after the racial injustice claims at Iowa. If he goes out and decides to, you know, the bars are back open and he decides to go out to the bars and have a couple drinks on a Friday night and he gets COVID, that's on him. But that's got nothing to do with football. That's got to do with a 22-year-old or an 18-year-old or 20-year-old, whatever the case may be, making a poor choice. Has nothing to do with football. Because once he gets back to the facility on Monday or Sunday or Saturday, whenever they're back in the facility next, if he tests positive, he's not walking in that facility. So, again, this is not a football issue. Anybody wants to say, well, the Big Ten and the Pac-12, they're endangering kids' lives? Explain to me the difference between this year and any other year. Because every year, football, I mean, listen, any sport, and football is a contact sport, any sport can endanger a person's life, right? I mean, there's risk in everything we do. We've talked about this ad nauseum. But the idea now, especially with this antigen testing, which the Big 12 and the Big 10, I believe the Pac-12 is undertaking as well. And I would have to believe that the SEC and the ACC are getting on board with this. This is going to be very similar to the NFL. There's going to be very few positives. There are going to be positives that could affect the season, especially because they're students. They're not professionals. They don't have the maturity just from a physiological standpoint. And so guys are going to make poor choices. But again, that's not football related. That's student athlete related. And if a kid does get the virus, guess what? You're out 21 days. That's what sucks about this. You are out 21 days. And I think, you know, a lot of people think, well, that's a little overboard. I think the main reason why the 21-day requirement was put in place by the Big Ten is because of the myocarditis thing. And even though I have not seen any definitive evidence to say that Big Ten athletes are more at risk, or athletes in general are more at risk for it, the concern is that if someone has myocarditis or develop signs of myocarditis, then that player, because he works his heart harder than the average person, could be at more of a risk for some sort of a, you know, a heart problem related to the swelling of the heart, which is, again, sign of myocarditis. So they're doing everything they can to me at this point, even though they handled this situation very, very, well, poorly is an understatement from the get-go. I don't know how you can possibly look at what they're doing now and saying what they're doing is irresponsible. I think they've been very, you know, forthright about how they're going to proceed with testing and their protocol. I think, you know, I wish it would have been done earlier. Maybe it couldn't have been. I think it probably could have been done a little sooner so we could have gotten the 10-game season in and had a couple bye weeks built in, but it is what it is. I think we're going to get football, and I have very, very little doubt on this.
Yeah, I mean, I'd agree. I think, you know, there's got to be a lot of thought process in going into that 21-day quarantine. I'd like to know personally what their reasoning is as far
as... Well, they're going to be testing on this myocarditis thing. Because if the player tests negative in a week, they want 2 weeks of testing that kid's heart to make sure that there aren't signs of myocarditis. That's what I gathered from this.
Well, that's what I wonder is, I don't know. I'm totally ignorant about myocarditis in general, but I'm just wondering if that is how long inflammation would take to go away once they clear the infection. I would think it would be a lot quicker than that. So I'm wondering what, you know, other tests, if they're actually doing more intensive tests of the heart, you know, of heart function and all that, aside from just inflammation, because once the inflammation's gone, I would think, and this is just an uninformed opinion, but I would think that would happen a lot quicker than another, what, you know, 11 days after they clear the infection.
Well, again, I see what you're saying. It's going to come up. I mean, it very well could come up with Iowa. And next week on the podcast, we're going to talk a little bit about Iowa football. We haven't really, you know, dove deep into the roster or the schedule. We hope to get the Krukos back on here as we lead up to the season to talk about the ins and outs of this year's Iowa Hawkeye football team. Alex, Kirk Ferentz alluded to at his last press conference that there may be players who opt out. A lot of players have opted out at different schools. Some players have opted back in. We got the unfortunate news this past week that Purdue wide receiver Rondale Moore has opted back in. Rondale Moore is an absolute, you know, Alex, you know all about this kid. He had opted out before the decision was made to bring football back, and now he's opting back in. Him and David Bell, how are they going to defend those two guys? Game week one.
Well, I don't know as far as defense. Honestly, it's hard to say from an armchair quarterback perspective, but hopefully Ferentz is willing to make on-the-fly adjustments, because we've seen Iowa get burned over and over again by receivers. It's harder with backs, running backs, I guess, but especially with receivers and not switching guys onto him. I know Ferentz has his methodology with that, but hopefully he's able to make adjustments on the fly if he starts getting burned by a guy like that. But all, you know, the other thing is, I think it's more important probably just to be able to score points. I think that's the thing that's kept Iowa, held Iowa back, is in the past Iowa's been so defensive oriented and conservative on offense that you just can't allow anything on for the other team's offense. You can't allow anything on defense. So, you know, they put up a couple touchdowns and it's almost like the game's out of reach. So hopefully, my hope is anyway, that this year Iowa will be able to put up enough points on offense to really keep themselves in games better. And I think that's probably going to be the key with that type of talented player.
Well, all I know is David Bell burned Iowa plenty of times last year when Rondale Moore was hurt. And now they get both those guys back. Rondale Moore reminds me a lot of Christian McCaffrey. I mean, ridiculously athletic, not very big. What a game week one. Now that, I mean, I didn't really feel that way before. I mean, I'm concerned about that game. We don't know what to expect week one. When's the last time we've had a week one Big Ten road game? But
with no other games prior to that.
Yeah, I mean, holy crap. That is going to be... That is one of the tougher games in the schedule. And maybe I'm living in the moment and I'm, you know, hyperbolizing this. I think that's one of the tougher games on this Iowa schedule, that first game against Purdue. We also heard that a couple players, at least one player from Michigan opted back in, I believe. Ohio State's too, Sean Wade opting back in. And there are other, I believe, an offensive lineman that opted back in as well. So guys are coming back. Now, I have a source, and I can't confirm this because the university has not said this publicly, and this athlete has not said this publicly. I have a source that has told me that Jaimin Colbert opted out. Now, the source also said that Colbert opted out prior to the Big Ten's announcement. So whether that means, I don't have details on if that meant he opted out before the initial cancellation of the season, if he opted out for whatever would have been a winter or spring season. There's a possibility he could opt back in. I can tell you this, Alex, and this is, again, I know this is reading into things, and we'll talk about some of these things on future shows. Being the devoted fan I am and wanting to have material for our podcast, Jaimin Colbert is one of the few players, there have been a couple others, but one of the few players that, A, I've not spotted in any of the university's photos of practice thus far, not spotted him once. And B, he has been silent as far as excitement or comments on the October 24th start date. He's not said anything that I can see on social media. So Iowa could be down maybe their best linebacker. What will that do if Jaimin Colbert does opt out?
Well, I mean, it doesn't help. You know, Iowa's usually got guys on deck at those positions. It seems like historically they've been good with that.
Remember Dylan Doyle, the coach of Chris Doyle. He's gone. In fact, he started at Baylor, I believe, yesterday. He was the starting linebacker for Baylor. They lost a good one in Dylan Doyle. And if you lose Jaimin Colbert, and you have to go up against a guy like Rondell Moore who can do everything, and who's, I mean, listen, you're going to have to play a lot of nickel package stuff in order to be able to defend. I mean, they're going to play cash every day. Dane Belton's going to have to really step up on some of these wide receivers because Iowa's not going to be able to go the classic 4-3 look against Purdue. I mean, I don't think they're going to be able to do that against many teams in the league. Penn State and Minnesota, they're just not going to be able to do it. So Jack Campbell, who are the other linebackers? Nick Neiman is going to have to play a lot, I think. Maybe we see Barrington Wade take a step forward. Justin Jacobs is a guy I've heard a lot of good things about, but this one's a tough one if it's true. And maybe he's trying to opt back in, and maybe that's why we've heard nothing. But, I mean, how long, Alex? I mean, if he hasn't opted in by now, and I'm not, maybe he has, and we're just not seeing him in these photos. There are a few other guys we haven't seen in these photos. But, first of all, does that make me sort of obsessed with the roster? That if I'm scouring photos to try to figure out who's playing and who's not?
It reminds me of Ace Ventura when he's looking at the photos and not finding Ray Finkel, and then looks at a different photo and finds him. It's like you're a pet detective or something.
Well, it is amazing how much you can learn from that, especially in a year like this where players are opting out. I will say good news, Larrick Jackson has expressed excitement. People were rumoring that he was opting out, and maybe he would have it had it been a winter or spring season. I wouldn't have been surprised. I know we talked about that. Brandon Smith was another guy that we had heard rumors about wanting to opt out. Both of those guys are practicing. Both of those guys have expressed excitement. There have been a few other players that I have not seen anything on social media from, and I've not located in any university photos. We can talk about that next week on the podcast, but Colbert is the one that's been rumored. And again, according to this source of mine, again, I know I sound like pre-Big Ten announcement. I have a source and I can't tell you who it is, but according to this source, he did opt out. So we'll wait and see on it. It's going to make things difficult. I think the coaches are high on Jack Campbell, but Dylan Doyle's departure can't be understated. There's a reason why he transferred to Baylor and is already the starter at Baylor. There's a big reason for that. So it's going to be tough. Let's run through some of the Week 4 college football games that we predicted early on. Alex, it was kind of a wild week. I mean, as an Iowa fan, now that Iowa's going to be playing next week, I'm rooting for the underdog basically every week. I know rankings don't really matter, especially right now before Iowa even plays, but I'm rooting for non-ranked teams. Kansas State, how about the Wildcats? They lose to Arkansas State last week or 2 weeks ago, and they come back and win on the road at number 3 Oklahoma. Does this take the Sooners, in an abbreviated season, Alex, does this take the Sooners out of the playoff race, or if they win the rest of their games, win the Big 12, could they still maybe get in with one loss depending on you know, what happens in other conferences?
Well, of course, it depends on what happens. I think probably, by my estimation, there's a better chance this year just because I think there's going to be more of this kind of you know, upsets, basically, this season than we are probably used to. So there could be more turmoil as far as records go. And yeah, I mean, I obviously it's surprising to see an upset, but I was less surprised just because everything's been so topsy-turvy lately to see that. I think that's going to be more of the norm this year.
Number 5, Florida struggled with Ole Miss for a while. Lane Kiffin's first head coaching gig in the SEC. He falls to the Gators, but it was close for a while, 51-35 there. Number 8, Auburn beat number 23, Kentucky, 29-13. Number 13, UCF over East Carolina, 51-28. Louisiana survived another one. They hit a 54-yard, what was that field goal they hit? Let me check this, see if I can find it here. 53-yard field goal from Louisiana Lafayette. Second straight game they've won in the final seconds. This one against Georgia Southern, they're now 3-0, including that win in Ames against Iowa State. Number 21, Pittsburgh over number 24, Louisville, 23-20. Syracuse over Georgia Tech, 37-30. Iowa State, Alex, Iowa State wins on the road, and I'm not surprised by that. They had a nice bounce-back victory. What was Brock Purdy doing? We're going to play this. Credit to Fox Sports on this, everybody. This is maybe the best audio that you'll ever hear from a commentator on a mistake from anybody in college football. So again, credit to Fox Sports on this. This is Iowa State TCU yesterday. Iowa State with the ball. Brock Purdy about to get sacked. Here it is.
We see both teams mix up the tempo. Look out. Purdy is... Whoa! What is he doing? What is Brock Purdy doing? Touchdown TCU with Kendrick Van Zandt. The question will be, was he down? Oh, my goodness.
I was expecting a clown whistle right there. What was that? It looked like he tried to go away, right?
Wow.
So here's the pressure from the field, obviously unaccounted for, untouched, and he is not down, and that is backward, so that forward part doesn't even matter. It didn't hit the ground enough. That is a fumble, scoop, and scoop-ish, and score.
Kind of, technically.
For Van Zandt, wow.
One more time, Alex, just for kicks.
Look out, Purdy is... Whoa, what is he doing? What is Brock Purdy doing?
What is he doing? What is Brock Purdy doing? Don't you love that? Good lord.
Yeah, I mean, did he think that TCU guy was his outlet back or
that's
what?
That's what I first thought, but my goodness.
So which was worse, that play or the bonehead play? I can't remember the receiver's name on the Seahawks today against the Cowboys.
Oh. The Purdy's was worse. I don't know what Metcalf was. I don't know what Metcalf was thinking, strolling into the end zone. I think he just thought no one was near him. But I mean, how do you do that? And that was a rookie that stripped him.
Yeah.
So I mean, I don't know. It's weird. Maybe it's
more egregious because it's almost more just cocky. Whereas it looks like Purdy maybe just missaw. You know. He thought that was his teammate or something. I don't know what he was thinking at that point.
But Iowa State doesn't
get like
a win.
The guys, you ever see sometimes the receiver will, you know, be way out in front and then they just drop the ball right on
that happened with John Loudermilk for Iowa in the Outback Bowl several years back. So yeah, I know how that feels. I know how it feels to be a fan of a team that happens to it. How about Mississippi State? What a win. I think first time a national champion or defending national champion has lost since like the 80s or something. Maybe it was before that. Number 6, LSU falls 44-34. Alex, another big upset. The SEC having problems thus far. And, you know, it doesn't help their playoff chances. I know a lot of people weren't real high on LSU this year, but they were ranked number 6 in the country.
Yeah, I mean, you got to think that maybe those people were right. I mean, you never really know how a team's going to bounce back when they, you know, lose personnel going into a new year. And looks like maybe that ranking was a little bit too high.
And you lose Joe Burrow, and he's sort of struggling in Cincinnati right now, but certainly was prolific his final year at LSU. How about number 8, Texas? They came back from 13 down, I believe, in the fourth quarter to Texas Tech to win in overtime. They should have lost that game, Alex, but that would have been really disastrous for the Big 12 to lose Oklahoma and Texas to lose in the same day. They do survive. Number 14, Cincinnati, took down number 22, Army, 24-10. Number 15, Oklahoma State over West Virginia, 27-13. Number 4, Georgia overcame a slow start, 37-10 over Arkansas. Virginia over Duke. Boston College over Texas State. Number 2, Alabama over Missouri. Number 10, Texas A&M. They survived a real scare against Vanderbilt, 17-12. Number 12, Miami. They've looked good so far this year over Florida State, 52-10. Number 16, Tennessee over South Carolina, 31-27. Number 20, Virginia Tech over North Carolina State. And number 7, BYU over Troy. Notre Dame, Wake Forest did get postponed. That was one of the bigger games this year. That's really the first game between two Power 5 teams. And again, I think a lot of that's contact tracing. But very interesting week in college football, Alex. Let's talk about Week 5. Let's predict some of our Week 5 picks. First of all, big Friday night game for BYU. Number 22, BYU taking on Louisiana Tech, 8 p.m. Both teams 2-0, ESPN2 on Friday.
I'll go with BYU.
I'm going to go BYU as well. Louisiana Tech, sneaky good, though. I think that's a close game. Let's see. South Carolina, number 3, Florida, 11 a.m. ESPN.
I'll go with Florida.
We got Florida as well. Number 9, Texas and TCU, 11 a.m.
I'll go with the Longhorns.
I got Texas as well. It's going to be impossible to predict some of these upsets, by the way. We found that out last week, but we'll try. Number 21, Tennessee and Missouri, 11 a.m. on Saturday, SEC Network.
I'll go Tennessee.
Got Tennessee as well. Number 22, Pittsburgh taking on North Carolina State, 11 a.m., ACC Network.
I'll go with Pitt.
I like Pitt as well. Number 13, Texas A&M, taking on number 2, Alabama. Boy, I'd love to see the Aggies win this one. 2:30 p.m. on CBS.
I'll go with Alabama.
I'll go with upset. We'll see what happens. I mean, Alabama looked pretty good against Missouri. A&M didn't look great against Vanderbilt, but I'll go with the Aggies. Number 12, North Carolina, taking on 2-0 Boston College. 2:30 p.m. on ABC.
I'll go with North Carolina.
I'll take Boston College. USF, South Florida, taking on number 15, Cincinnati, 2:30 p.m. on ESPN+.
I'll go with USF.
I got Cincinnati. How about number 17, Oklahoma State in Kansas, 2:30 p.m. ESPN?
I'll go Oklahoma State.
I got the Cowboys as well. Number 25, Memphis at 3-0 SMU, 2:30 p.m. on ESPN2.
I'll go with Memphis.
Going SMU, they've played two more games than Memphis, so I'm going to go with SMU. Texas Tech and Kansas State, 2:30 p.m. on FS1.
I'll go with Texas Tech.
I'm going to say Kansas State loses, has a letdown after their big win this past Saturday. I'll go Texas Tech as well. Virginia Tech and Duke, 3 p.m. ACC Network.
I'll go with Virginia Tech.
I've got Virginia Tech as well. Ole Miss and Kentucky, 3 p.m. SEC Network.
I'll take Ole Miss.
I've got Kentucky. How about Navy and Air Force, Battle of the Academies, 5 p.m. CBS Sports Network.
I'll take Air Force.
I take the team that's played more. I'll take Navy, 1-1. Air Force, this will be their first game they've been able to play. Number 7, Auburn. Number 4, Georgia. Game of the week, 6:30 p.m. Saturday Night Football on ESPN.
I'll go with Georgia.
I am going to go with Auburn. I thought Georgia looked a little bit vulnerable last week for the first half. I think Auburn finds a way to win this game. Tulsa and Central Florida. Central Florida clocking in at number 11 in the rankings this week. 6:30 p.m. on ESPN2.
I'll go with UCF.
I like UCF as well. Arkansas and number 16, Mississippi State, 6:30 p.m. SEC Network.
I'll take Miss State.
I like Mississippi State as well. How about this? This is actually the Saturday Night Football game on ABC. How about Iowa State playing host to number 18 Oklahoma? And I guess I didn't realize this. I don't think game day's coming to Ames. Did you hear where game day's going to be for this week? Because that is the 6:30 game. Let me look this up real quick. I would think I would have heard something by now. Let me double check this, because that is the night game on ABC. Nope, they're going to the Georgia-Auburn game. So it will be Saturday Night Football, but it will not be game day. 6:30 p.m. on ABC, Sooners and Cyclones. I'm just going to say this right now. I'm going Cyclones, Alex. I think they find a way, even though it's been kind of an ugly couple of performances, especially with the Brock Purdy pass back. They played okay yesterday. I mean, they won on the road against TCU. I think Oklahoma's vulnerable right now. I think their quarterback, what's his name? Is it Sipples or not Sipples? That's the Iowa Nice guy. Who is their quarterback? Rattler. I think he looked a little vulnerable. I don't think he was ready for the moment last week, and I think not having a non-conference hurt him. I'm going to go Iowa State in the upset.
Yeah, I'll go ISU. It seems like they pulled this kind of upset off quite a bit, it seems like.
And boy, Cyclone fans will be screaming Big 12 championship after this week if they win. Number 20, LSU at Vanderbilt, 6:30 p.m. SEC Network.
I'll go with LSU.
I will go LSU as well. Virginia at number 1, Clemson, 7 p.m. ACC Network.
I'll go with the Tigers.
I'll go Clemson as well. All right, moving over to the NFL as we wrap up our podcast for week 128. Games this week. First of all, Packers, Saints. Alex, last time we recorded, it was in the fourth quarter of a tight NFL Sunday night football game. It's the same this week, 27-27 right now on NBC on the fourth quarter. Earlier today, the Bears beat the Falcons in another tremendous comeback for Chicago. The Bills beat the Rams. Josh Allen, the number one scoring quarterback in fantasy football. Alex, we watched him. We saw him at Wyoming play against Iowa in Kinnick Stadium. How good has Josh Allen become?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's kind of like the Andrew Luck kind of guy where he kind of just becomes what everyone expected. I mean, he was good against Iowa, but you know, you wouldn't have probably expected that except for basically all the comparisons that he drew that we all heard going into that game. So I think he's pretty much followed that trajectory that everyone expected.
The Bills beat the Rams. How about the Washington football team? They lost by 14 to the Browns. The Titans beat the Vikings in a one-point game. Tight one there. Steven Gostkowski with another miraculous kick to win that game. The Patriots beat the Raiders 36-20. Nick Mullins led the 49ers to a victory without George Kittle or their quarterback, Jimmy Garoppolo, 36-9. They were down Raheem Mostert, but the Giants were down Saquon Barkley, but San Francisco wins by 27. How about the Bengals and the Eagles? First tie of the year. That was an ugly game. Final in overtime, 23-23. The Steelers beat the Texans, 28-21. Colts over the Jets, 36-7. Panthers over the Chargers, 21-16. Tom Brady and the Bucks beat Noah Fant and the Broncos, 38-10. Lions over the Cardinals, 26-23. A little bit of a surprise there. Cowboys fell to the Seahawks, 38-31. And on Thursday night, the Dolphins beat the Jaguars 31-13. We've got Monday Night Football tomorrow, Chiefs and Ravens. But Alex, let's talk about week four in the NFL. Thursday Night Football. We got a good game Thursday night. Broncos and Jets. Two teams are combined 0-6.
I'll go with Broncos.
Gotta give.
Yeah.
I'm gonna go Broncos.
Maybe they'll both lose. They'll probably have a draw and then nobody.
Maybe they'll tie. Yeah, maybe they'll be 0-3-1. Okay. Colts Bears Sunday noon on CBS.
I'll go with the Bears.
Couple surprises here. These two teams are combined 5-1. I'll go with the Colts. Jaguars Bengals noon on CBS.
I'll go with the Jaguars.
I will go with the Jaguars as well. Browns Cowboys noon on Fox.
I'll go Cowboys.
I like the Cowboys. Saints Lions noon on Fox.
I'll go with the Saints.
I've got the Lions. Steelers, Titans, noon on CBS.
I'll go Titans.
I like the Steelers. Two teams combined 6-0. Seahawks, Dolphins, noon on Fox.
Take the Dolphins.
I like the Seahawks. Chargers, Bucks, noon on CBS.
I'll go Bucks.
I like the Bucks. Ravens, Washington, 12 p.m. CBS.
I'll go with Baltimore.
I like the Ravens. Cardinals, Panthers, noon on Fox.
I'll go Cardinals.
I will go with the Panthers. Vikings, Texans, noon on Fox. These two teams combined 0-6.
I'll go with the Texans.
I'll go Vikings. Surprise, they're 0-6, by the way. I'm surprised by that. Both teams have their starting quarterbacks and Kirk Cousins and Deshaun Watson. It just hasn't worked so far. Giants, Rams, 3:05 p.m. on Fox.
I'll go Rams.
I like the Rams. How about this matchup? Patriots, Chiefs, 3:25 p.m. CBS.
I'll go Chiefs.
I like the Patriots. Bills, Raiders, 3:25 p.m. on CBS.
I'll go with the Raiders.
We'll go with the Bills, right on Josh Allen. Eagles and 49ers. By the way, Alex, that tie between the Bengals and the Eagles, both teams were 0-2, so they are each now 0-2-1. But the 49ers will try to keep things going next week, hopefully get Jimmy Garoppolo and George Kittle back. 7:20 p.m. on NBC.
I'll go with the Niners.
I got the Niners as well. How about Falcons-Packers Monday Night Football, 7:15 p.m. on ESPN?
I'll go with the Packers over the interception king, Matt Ryan.
Yeah, I'm going to go Falcons. I do think that Matt Ryan's going to, at some point, him and Drew Brees are going to have to start playing. I mean, I guess they're both old. They're both getting old, right? I mean,
well, you know,
Aaron Rodgers.
I'm like permanently biased against Matt Ryan because I had him 1 year in fantasy, and he did great all year. And then in a really important game, he threw 5 picks in a row. So whenever I see him throw a pick, it's just flashbacks to that.
Alex, NBA Finals, we know the Lakers are in. They close things out against the Clippers. I think the Clippers just ran out of gas. Your thoughts?
The Nuggets, you mean?
What did I say?
Clippers.
Yeah, I don't know why I said the Clippers. Yeah, the Clippers, I think the Clippers collapsed mentally. I think the Nuggets just ran out of gas, especially after that AD3. That AD3, I know they won the next game, but that buzzer beater really hurt them.
Yeah, I mean, you know, to me, the Nuggets were playing, I'm not sure how to say this, kind of on the bubble, if you know what I mean, but they were playing like, yeah, I mean, they were obviously tired. They'd come back from 3-1 down twice, a third time we're trying to, and it's just like they were at red line, basically, and that's just not going to continue. And, you know, the Lakers are just a better team. It's just simply put. I mean, the Nuggets are extremely talented, but, you know, this is the first that I've ever seen the Nuggets play like this in a postseason. They always just, I don't know what. It's almost like they just disappear. So this is the first time they've actually, and I think part of it is because Jokic is in good shape now, finally, but, and Murray seems to realize that he can basically score whenever he wants. But, I think a combination of things. But the Lakers are just a better team, I think. And even though they don't quite have, it's hard to say. I don't think they have the firepower of, well, I guess I would have said that I thought the Clippers had more firepower, but I just think the Lakers are a better team. So, yeah, the Nuggets, you know, they have a lot to be proud of in this postseason. They totally played beyond expectation. I mean, nobody really counted them in at all just because they kind of have been a non-factor in postseasons in the past few years, so. They definitely have a lot to be proud of and put themselves on the map for sure.
Heat over the Celtics today. They win that series 4-2. Many people's pick to come out of the East, the Boston Celtics, they are out. So we've got Heat and Lakers. I do think the Heat have a chance in this series, Alex, and I think this series goes 6 or 7.
Yeah, I mean, this will be a fun matchup. I haven't been watching NBA much in the past couple weeks, but I'm going to for the finals for sure. And you know, to me, the Heat, it's hard for me because, you know, I've always been a LeBron fan, but I really like this Heat team. They're just dogs. I've said that a lot, but you look at Adebayo, had 32 points, 14 rebounds today. I mean, he's been doing that, not the points, but he's been probably averaging, I'd say, 15 rebounds a game, it seems like. And if you watch them, he's just an animal. And that's not just him. It's the whole team. They all play like scrappers, and you know, I think the Lakers are going to have their hands full. The Lakers are not, like I said, I don't think they have a lot of firepower. I mean, they obviously have two top tier players, but beyond that, they really don't, and they don't have much, I don't think, beyond that. So I think they'll have their hands full. I mean, the Heat they play together better than any team the Lakers have played so far consistently. I mean, the Heat have just kept it
together this whole postseason, which, you know, you kind of think that a team like them, who are, to me, are underdogs, would have a bit of a letdown. They've kept their level high, so it's going to be a fun game or a fun series to watch. Yeah, I don't know. I almost see this going differently. I feel like maybe the Lakers take a commanding lead in the series, but I could see the Heat scrapping back, and that would definitely, if we could get a game seven, that would be pretty cool to watch.
All right, next week we are going to talk Hawkeye football. Right? It's been a long time coming. Next week, Alex, we're going to begin our three-week tune-up to the start of the season. And next week, we're going to talk Iowa football rosters. Isn't that going to be fun? Breaking down the depth chart and the rosters, Alex. How about it?
Yeah, some homework for once. It's been so long, and I just haven't even been in that mode, think to even mentally prepare for that. So I'm going to have to do some research, and I know some things have changed with COVID and opting out and that kind of stuff. So it's going to be different. I mean, I'd kind of turned my mind off, you know, back when the season got canceled, and now I got to turn it back on.
And who knows when we'll get an announcement, if we get an announcement about anybody opting out. But again, I'll share some homework that I did. I think the majority of these players, especially the starters, are all going to play. We don't know about Colbert. There's a couple others that I have question marks about, but I think we're going to see a really, really solid Iowa football team. We're going to break down the roster next week on week 129, beginning our three-week tune-up to the start of the season. For Matt Gatens, Alex Bratta, I'm Corey Bratta. Thanks for joining us for another week of Bratta's Branded Thoughts. We are so happy to be with you and talking sports. It's sports are back, Alex. I think we all agree on that. They're basically fully back, especially once we hit late October. Everything's basically back. Fans, not really, not so much everywhere. The Big Ten's not allowing fans, and it's totally understandable, although Iowa State is allowing fans this weekend, 15,000 fans for the Oklahoma game. We are very, very appreciative to Matt Gatens for joining us on the show, one of my favorite Hawkeyes of all time to play for Iowa basketball, and his dad, of course, a legend in Iowa City, University of Iowa legend as well. So we are so thankful to him for joining us, and best of wishes to him and Brady Ellingson, both receiving promotions on the Drake basketball staff. We'll talk to you next week on week 129 of Bratta's Branded Thoughts. In the meantime, stay safe, stay healthy, watch some sports, and go Hawks.